Hi, Steve. Thank you for joining me today. Now, Steve, you use a technique called provocative energy therapy, PET for short. What would you describe the differences are between that there are between PET and EFT?
Well, PET originally began as an amalgamation of EFT and provocative therapy.
Because
David Lake and I had both been trained in provocative therapy. We caught the provocative virus, you could say, from Frank Farrelly, and once that thing gets hold of you, you're basically doomed to continue infecting others with it for the rest of your life. And so we were totally hooked on this way of working with people. It was such fun, and it was so empowering for the client and the therapist at the same time. And then we learned about EFT. And my original thought was, oh my goodness, I'm going to have to give up. You know, I've been struggling to learn this wonderful approach, but I'm going to have to give that up because the tapping produces such great results. Then both David and I realized that actually you can integrate them both together. And so we started using the provocative communication style combined with the tapping. And originally we were doing the very traditional, mechanical, basic recipe of EFT, but we were just exaggerating some of the setup statements with clients, and we were, really getting into the issues with them in the way you do with the provocative style. Then we, we've started to experiment with the tapping approach, and we've really shortcut the tapping process. We now use an approach we call SET, Simple Energy Techniques, which is basically a way of continually tapping. And we do that while we're using a lot of provocative techniques. And provocative therapy essentially is a way of playing devil's advocate with people, but you're on the side of the angels.
Yeah, you push a few buttons with provocative therapy, don't you? But buttons are there only because people have issues.
Well, exactly. I mean, the key is actually to bring stuff out. And so one of the things that the technique allows you to do, it allows you to get to the area of the greatest hurt very quickly and release that. And you get to release that not just with the great power of the meridian tapping as in EFT, but also the use of humor and the energy of the provocative approach is just all contributes to the healing.
Oh, yes, and that brings us to our next topic, Steve, humor. Because provocative, I was down at your London conference, and I actually laughed all the way through that conference. I had a really great time because, you're using a lot of humor on that stage. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about humor and what skills you think people need to develop in order to use humor.
I think the big one, number one, is you've got to have a sense of humor yourself. And so those who don't have one will probably not proceed. But really, that also means that you see things differently. You don't automatically get stuck in the perspective that the client's already stuck in, so therefore you're not reinforcing their problem for them. It's important to be able to see things from a wide range of perspectives and to be a little bit flexible and adaptable. Then there's, you really need to have rapport, the capacity to get rapport with a wide range of people, because and to be able to use humor in different ways, because what's funny for me may not be funny for this client. So the key really with using humor is to find out what's funny for them, what kind of humor do they find funny, and that could be completely different to the style that you're used to using. So when I meet someone and when I sit down with a client, I'm always thinking, you know, what's their sense of humor like? What do they find funny? And the humor actually has to come out of the process. It's not something you put in. You certainly bring all your knowledge and information and all the stuff that you've learned in your life. And the flexible way of working allows you to bring all that in. But that has to be connecting with where the client's at. So a sense of humor, rapport, and really also, I think another thing is the ability to calibrate.
Absolutely.
And, that's an NLP term, you would know.
Yeah.
That's really just to be able to pace the client and to be able to work out what's happening with them on a moment-by-moment basis and match your style to theirs, really.
I'd also say I think people need to be very, very relaxed, because then it's all spontaneous, isn't it?
Exactly, and I think that's where you really need to do your own work, because if you're sitting down with a client and their stuff upsets you, mm-hmm. it's going to be pretty hard to draw humour from that.
Yeah.
I must say that when I, I struggled with learning the provocative approach for years, and the tapping has really helped me with that, to be able to go wherever the client is, because I have a great confidence that the meridian stimulation will really help to deal with whatever happens.
Mm-hmm. All right, what are the benefits of using humour as opposed to just straight therapy?
Oh, it's fun. I say that, and it seems a little light, but fun has been downgraded in the therapy world.
Mm-hmm.
And, I've often said, goodness me, this is all about emotional freedom. Even in the area of emotional freedom techniques and energy healing, everybody's so goddamn grim. They're so damn serious. And, I remember Milton Erickson, he said people have enough seriousness in their problems. They don't need serious therapy. What they really need is to have some light. And to have light cast on your problem is a great, wonderful thing. Humour brings perspective. Humour brings relief. Humour in itself is part of the healing. It's not only life affirming, it can save your life, and there are numerous instances of people in very difficult situations where just a little element of humour brought humanity back.
Mm.
A classic example I know is the guy that was had been kidnapped and was imprisoned for a huge amount of time, and he was having to shower in just a horrible place with rats and feces and mess and everything. And he looked up, and on the wall was someone had written, "Smile, you're on candid camera." Now, that's the moment that he attributes with bringing him back to life.
Yes.
And it's a great grounding thing in a situation like that.
But it allows you to see things from a different perspective, doesn't it? And it changes the chemical balance of your whole body.
Oh, there's a huge number of physical things that happen, and there's plenty of research now. There are people are having workshops and conferences and things all over the world on mm-hmm. on the healing effects of humour, and it does work, even if you just stand there and go ha ha ha, and all that kind of stuff as they do in the laughter club. But gee, it's wonderful when the humour comes out of you and when you see the absurdity of something that previously was a huge problem to you.
Yeah. Well, when wouldn't you use humour? When wouldn't you use it?
Well, I actually wouldn't use it quite a lot. We use... although humour tends to be a feature of our work,
mm-hmm.
It's not something that you do every minute of every session, for example. I remember, Frank Farrelly, who taught us provocative therapy, and he said it's about being able to use all of your experiences humorously and seriously.
Mm.
So it's actually really about matching that to the client at the time. A lot of people say, you wouldn't use the provocative style with grief. Not true, actually. But although it's not true that I wouldn't use humour with grief, I wouldn't be looking for a laugh a minute. And the humour actually comes when it's ready rather than being the first thing you go to. So, in getting rapport, the starting place often is, well, always, is where the client is.
Yeah, I've used humour with grief, but as you say, it's you have to hit the right moment when the client is ready for it, isn't it?
Oh, yes. I've just had a client just before we had our call here, and this is a young boy who's become school phobic. I've been working with him and his dad, and the boy himself was bringing out some humour during the funeral service for his mother.
Mm.
And those things are always present. It's just that we can sometimes even feel guilty about noticing them,
mm-hmm.
because the rule is that this is a horrible, serious event. But, the tragic mask and the comic mask are always part of the human experience, whether we like it or not,
Yeah, it's part of life, isn't it? And
exactly.
It adds a richness to it. I've seen people react adversely to humour as well. What suggestions would you give people? What would you suggest people do if that occurs? How can they deal with that?
Mostly, if they're working with someone and the person reacts adversely to humour, then the impression is probably that the humour is laughing at them rather than with them. And so, really, if that were me, I would probably apologise and try and get back into rapport with the person. Because clearly, this isn't funny. And if I think it's funny and they don't, it isn't funny. So I think that's really an issue of rapport and losing pace with a person if that comes up.
Yes.
Because the best humour comes out of them rather than is directed at them.
And of course, often that is an issue that a client has, isn't it, feeling people are laughing at them.
Yeah, and I mean, you certainly don't want to join in with that as the therapist.
Mm-hmm.
But if that were an issue, I'd certainly want to go there and deal with it. And probably one of the ways a provocative approach would deal with that would be to become overly serious.
Yes.
And encourage seriousness to the point where the client really went to the other side.
Well, that's an interesting slant there, Steve. Very interesting. Now, let's get down to this. You're actually going to come over to England in April, and what are you going to be doing at that event?
We're actually doing a workshop which we're going to be teaching PET.
Yeah.
And we're also going to be focusing on, the workshop's called Lighten Up Your Life, and because that's really one of the greatest things that PET offers. But we're focusing specifically on trauma. My contention is that everybody is walking around suffering post-traumatic stress, not just those that are diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder. And I have this concept that of everyday humour, I'm confusing the two topics, but that's normally the way, everyday trauma. And everybody, you know, it's like the stuff that happens to you every day as you go through your life. And often we don't realise what effect that can be having on us. And so many people are still reacting to the world as they were when those bad things happened to them because they haven't really moved on. And I think people who come to the workshop are going to be surprised just how much freedom they can get when they get into some of those, you know, little P traumas.
Yeah.
They're not necessarily the overwhelming things, but they're the things like, you know, you would had to read in front of the class and you got laughed at and all that kind of stuff that happens to just about everybody. And it sticks with you. And surprise, surprise, 20 years later, 30 years later, you have to give a speech and there it is. You know?
It's like the accumulative baggage of life, isn't it?
Yeah. And we're going to help people to let some of that go and also to release a whole lot of capacity for humour and having fun.
Yeah.
And as you know, that's a feature of our workshop, so hopefully it's something that we can offer to the field.
Well, yeah, I would say that coming to your conference last year, I had so much fun there, but I also learned an awful lot there, you know, and I think that's very important if you're in a learning environment. You want to enjoy the experience and feel that you've been really entertained. At least I do.
Oh, well, I personally learn better when I'm having fun.
I do,
but
yes.
It's, you know, I think you've made a key point there. It's not just having fun at the expense of learning. It's actually learning and doing deep work and having fun doing it. Now, some people can't even believe that this can happen. They believe that only, you know, when you're stuck in the deepness and the horribleness of things, can you actually release them? Actually, we found that the humour, it's just like a spoonful of sugar helped the medicine go down. It really helped to deal with stuff. And, you know, Gary talks about tearless trauma. We've got a number of techniques that make the help you to deal with trauma with a lot less tears. And it's very, very effective.
I've seen humour collapse things down instantly.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes if you get a powerful image associated with something, you can't see it the same way ever again.
No, brilliant. Well, thank you, Steve. Thank you very much for speaking with me this morning. And, yeah, good luck with that.
No worries. Can I, for anyone who is listening and they haven't yet registered, maybe I could direct them over to the website?
Please do.
Okay, to do a shameless marketing thing.
Please do.
Our website is www.eftdownunder.com. That's all one word, eftdownunder.com. And on the events calendar there, there's lots of workshops. We're doing the Lighten Up workshop all around the world, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll also be doing that over in London in April. And we'll look forward to catching up with you.
Are you going to Germany with that one as well?
We're actually doing some PET workshops over there, and we'll be doing some parts of this workshop in mm-hmm. that. So there is some there's a PET experiential workshop over there, and there's a PET training workshop, which is specifically training PET. In Lighten Up, we're actually combining both ideas and also focusing on trauma. So like a whole lot of things in one.
All right, so it should be very... And very interesting event. So thank you very much for that, Steve. And,
no worries. It's been a pleasure, as always, talking to you.
All right. Have a lovely day with that. Thank you.
See you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.